Hey everybody, welcome back to the Oath to Talk podcast, episode number 20 this week. We are joined by our favorite recurring guest, Dr. Madhav Patel. If you don't know Madhav, he's been on the podcast before, but he is a resident in Arizona, and this week we really just talk about our transition into being faculty between me and Jay, and Madhav weighs in on a resident's perspective on some of the stuff we talk about. So we kind of break down some of the things we've been having trouble with this week as our first week as attendings. Things like the EMR and establishing a clinic workflow, things like that. And we also get into some of Madhav stuff, like how he almost won a national spelling bee and, you know, his issues with football, which we always seem to bring up on this podcast. But bear with us. We're trying here. If the audio seems a little choppy in parts of the podcast, it's because I had to edit part of it, and I usually do not edit this podcast, but I kind of forgot we were doing a podcast and parts of it, and may have dropped some stuff that I did not want out there for HIPAA reasons. So please excuse the editing, but I hope you guys enjoy it. If you do like what we're doing, please leave us 5 stars on your favorite or your preferred podcasting platform. And without further ado, Dr. Madhav Patel.
Welcome back, everybody. Ortho Talk Podcast, episode number 20? 20. It's been 20 episodes. Isn't that crazy?
20 episodes. Yeah. Wow.
Today we have Madhav Patel, who is back for his third time, I think. Maybe recurring guest.
We're just talking about guest.
Just talking about how we're going to put that on his resume as he drinks from a California mug that he probably had to pay exorbitant amount of taxes to obtain. Is that right?
They spelled California wrong.
Yeah, and then Jay Chen.
This will guarantee you a spot in any fellowship, putting the Ortho Talk Pod on your resume.
I should hope so.
So, busy week for everyone, right? Madhav, I'm assuming you're busy because you're still in residency. Me and Jay, probably the busiest I've been in a while. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I had a month before my job started, so I was not doing a whole lot. So definitely the busiest I've been in quite a while, for sure. We both started our first week of practice.
And, yeah.
How's locums? What's in the world? How's that like?
I don't even know what that means, really, for surgery.
Yeah, I don't
aside
know.
Aside from, like, taking trauma call.
Yeah, so that's, a lot of people do that, where they just go and take trauma call for a weekend or something. That's probably the more traditional way, but this is basically just like a job. I mean, like, I had I don't even know what locum's tenens means. I'm going to look that up. Basically, like, I started on Monday, and we had 2 days of orientation, which was basically computer work. And I miss Epic already. That's probably, like, takeaway number one, is as crappy as Epic can be, it's really efficient sometimes. Yeah.
What do you use?
We use two different systems. So we use Meditech, which is apparently like this ancient system that everyone hates. We use that in the hospital. And then in the clinic, we use a different system called Med ENT or MedEnt, or so I don't really know how to say it. But it, you know, it's not as bad as Meditech. It's not great. Like, it can definitely be more efficient. So basically you have to learn two systems to do anything. And, that's why my orientation was 2 days. So like the first day was one system, second day was the other system. And yeah, that was, I miss Epic, I really do. And Jay, you're transitioning from Epic to Epic to Epic, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, yeah. Everything's a little, I mean, everything is, it's all Epic, but it all has slight changes. So when I went from residency to fellowship, it was still Epic. To Epic, but the Epic they had at Duke was just very different.
Yeah, so ours was like that too. It's like every Epic is just a little different.
Well, I'm back at UTMB, and it's like it's more like the Duke Epic now. So they must have transitioned,
okay,
as well. But the thing is, like the way that billing and coding is done is still a little different. So, you know, in fellowship, an example for clinic notes, we would enter in the diagnosis under the visit diagnosis area or the problem list, and we would pull it into our notes, and it would, you know, we had a dot phrase, mm-hmm. or the templates automatically pulled it in. But in residency, I don't remember doing that very much. We always just kind of hand typed our assessment, like our diagnosis under the assessment, for just small practice changes like that. That, you know, I'm trying to incorporate some of the things in the fellowship into my templates.
It's so. It's all the stuff that you thought was annoying as a resident, right? That you had, yeah. All of a sudden you're starting to pull into stuff like our clinic notes. So our clinic notes are basically built by our coding department. So it's weird. Everything is set up as a template. So you can bill either level 3 or level 4, and you pick your note template based on your level of billing. So if I want to pick like level 3 foot and ankle or something, level 4 hand, level 3 hip, they're all templates built for each of them, and you pull that in. That's how they established it. That's not what I'm doing though. Like there's a general ortho note, so I just pull that in, and then I, you know, make a couple changes here and there, and I put in my own templates, which are basically like my dot phrases that I had in Epic. And the system has like its own kind of version of dot phrases. They call it shorthand. It's not as good as dot phrases because you can't F2 through the asterisks like you could in Epic. So I had to manually like double click each asterisk, fill it in. It just takes a little longer. You know, it's not as efficient, but that's basically what I'm doing. And it's kind of, I don't know. The coders, they said that it's pretty thorough, so I'm living with it. But I don't know, man. It takes more time. And that was most of my time, especially Wednesday. Wednesday was my first clinic. I spent almost all my time just, like, documenting stuff, trying to figure out the system.
How many patients did you have in your first clinic?
Probably 14, I think, in a full day.
Yeah, you don't have any help. You don't have a scribe. You don't
no
have
scribe. There's a PA, but he was on vacation. So it was just me and MA and a nurse doing the clinic. And it's different. I'm still getting used to it. Like we don't have computers in every patient room. So, you know, the first day I was like struggling because one, I didn't have access to the PAC system until like halfway through clinic. So I was like trying to figure out how to show people their x-rays. And I couldn't really document in the room like I usually like to do. So I would have to go talk to the patient, do the whole encounter, come back outside, have a laptop at the nurse's station, do everything on that, or go back to my office, do everything in my office, come back later. It was just, you know, it was like not efficient at all. And then the second day I started to figure it out a little bit because I was worrying less about what order is what and like how to do a PT order and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So then I had a laptop with PACS open, with the EMR open, and I would just take that into patients' rooms and use it there like a computer. And that seemed to work a little bit better. But yeah, I've only had two clinics. We didn't work on Friday, so next clinic is tomorrow, which would be Monday, which is when this podcast drops. So, yeah.
I'm trying to figure out, you know, I remember in residency, we would see like 30, 40 patients in a half day. And, you know, as a resident, you're flying around and you're you're writing all the notes and you're keeping up. In fellowship, we would see, you know, it depends on who's attending you were with, but we would also see high volumes. So I've had three clinics. And every clinic's been a half-day clinic, and I've probably seen about 8 patients in each clinic. I'm just like, holy cow, how do I keep up with like these 8 patients? It's it's interesting because when you're starting out, you know, you always want to give the patient a good experience, so you want to answer all their questions, explain everything thoroughly, different solutions, risks, benefits, all that stuff. So I think I'm doing a pretty good job of doing all that. But it all takes a lot of time, and I've got resident help too, so I'm not even, you know, doing most of this on my own. But there's still so much paperwork that piles up. So I don't know. Much respect to those other attendings who are able to crank through and keep their patient satisfaction high.
So the other thing is,
oh, go ahead, Mina.
All right. Like as a resident, some of these attendings, like at the end of the day, you mention someone and they remember the person like by name. I'm like, I didn't even look at their name. And you remember them by name after having seen 43 other people. Like, pretty acquired skill, I'm sure.
Yeah, but. I am. Yeah, I don't. I have a hard time remembering names. They just all blend together. Even this week, it was such a blur, you know.
I have a general policy that if I know the patient's name, it's a bad thing.
Yeah, that's usually.
It means I've seen them too many times in the hospital as a resident, because I don't see them longitudinally in clinic. So.
Yeah. Jay, did you what did you like make your own templates for your clinic?
Yeah, so that's another thing when you start practice, you have to, or you should, I guess, if you're using an EMR, you should probably design templates. Otherwise, you'll be writing a lot of notes over and over again and writing the same thing. So I do have templates, and that's also kind of figuring out what works. So the template I have, we use it in fellowship, but obviously most of us using it were foot and ankle fellows. So it's a very long, lengthy template. It's got a bunch of physical exam maneuvers and columns. And one of the things I'm trying to figure out is, you know, what works for the residents who will be writing a lot of my notes, you know? So a lot of my templates are very detailed for the foot and ankle stuff, but people who aren't, you know, fellows in foot and ankle surgery may or may not, you know, want that level of detail in their notes or be able to use those templates very well. So it's a work in progress. You know, I've had to revise my template probably a couple times by now, just small changes here and there. And sometimes, you know, there'd be typos where I put it on accident, something like, you know, I've got a thing for brisk capillary refill. And for the smart list, the options I gave it were, I think were like, yes. And no, the topic was capillary refill. It just said capillary refill. And then my answer choices were like yes and no. And it didn't really make a lot of sense. So I had to revise that to like brisk and, you know, not present or sluggish or something. Yeah. So just small things I've had to revise. And then I had a fancy header that I stole from fellowship. And then Shalee, one of my posting people, she was making fun of my header because of how big and long it was. So I was like, okay, I'll cut that down a
little bit. Wait, what do you mean header? Like your name?
So my template, I've got this like long blue bar at the top, and then I've got my name, and I've got another blue bar, and then it says like foot and ankle surgery clinic new or something. But it took up like half the first page, and you know, my surgery schedule was making fun of that. So I was like, fine, I'll just like erase all this and just have a blue bar.
In theory, those notes are seen by the written notes are seen by the referring providers. So.
Yeah.
Nice if it looks fancy in theory.
Yeah. The thing about templates, like one, they have to be detailed, but also I think you judge a template's like success based on how quickly you can fill it out too. That's what I'm starting to realize. It's like you can make a great template, but it can be extremely inefficient. So I don't know what's working best. Like I think for me, the way I tried it, and it sounds like, Jay, your template is, like, you click through every part, right?
Well, so here's the one thing. I've got a lot of boxes that you can click in, but there's a button in Epic that autofills everything. So for all of my selections, I have default answers. So, you know, I've got – so physical exam, I've got, like, you know, 50, mm-hmm. 50 possible things you could fill in, let's say. But all of them have a default of being negative. Mm-hmm. So the thing you do is you go in there, and for your pertinent positives, you fill those in. You know, so they have tenderness here, they've got swelling here, they've got, you know, positive anterior drawer, whatever it is. And then, but say those are your positives, and then everything else is normal. So their strength is normal, their sensation is normal, their alignment's normal. You don't have to click those. You don't have to fill those in as normal. You can just click the button at the top that autofills the default. And I set the default to all of those as basically being negative or normal. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that saves time.
Yeah. So my little template, like phrases, they can't. There's no like smart boxes or anything like that. You don't really get a choice. So I just set everything to normal basically, and then I just go in and modify the ones that are abnormal and change those responses online. Yeah, but I like you probably have different notes and stuff too, right? Like, or I don't know, because you just do foot. So you probably just need a footnote.
Yeah.
Like pretty much. For me it's different because like I first of all I'm seeing like general right now, but even for like my sports stuff, like I have a hand, I have a foot, I have a knee, shoulder, hip, you know, I've got all that stuff, elbow. But yeah, so like I have one HPI for each body part. I've got a physical exam for each body part, and then I've just got like general like phrases for parts of my plan, like my surgery consent phrase, like you know what I'm talking about, like mm-hmm. All those kind of stuff. So how do they do it over there, Mita? How do you guys do it?
So we work at a bunch of places, but the two main, so the, when I'm at my my home institution, I guess you could call it, we work out with CORE as the outpatient group, and then Banner's the hospital network. CORE's also got its own hospital. So CORE from the very beginning said, we're going to have our own practice management arm where we write our own EMR and collect outcomes. And then CORE actually licenses that to other groups, mm-hmm. for other orthopedic groups across the country. So CORE's got a very dedicated orthopedic specific EMR, which I think is freaking fantastic. Like, it's like almost the whole thing is templated and click through, and nice. They've got Dragon, so you can dictate most of your notes.
Yeah.
And obviously it has all the elements you need, although I think that all goes out the window next year. So I don't know what they're going to do to change, but, and then the hospital uses Cerner, which is terrible. But I have so many templates at this point where, like, I have one physical exam template for every fracture, and, like, you know, like,
yeah.
you get to the point where my notes only take 2 or 3 minutes now,
yeah.
unless there's something significant to document.
Right. That's what I'm struggling with, is getting back to that 2 to 3 minute mark. Cause I used to be pretty quick yeah. with notes. And
I will say, once you go with a mic, I don't think you can go back. I mean, so it is life changing.
Yeah. So like, that's the thing with this. We use Dragon also, but apparently they have to, like, come set it up on your computer or something. And it's like this big ordeal. I don't quite get it, but they haven't set it up for me yet. So I don't have my Dragon dictation set up yet. But apparently you could just like click through stuff and dictate with your voice, right?
Yeah, that sounds incredible. Like, we, like, the first week, I remember talking into the mic with, like, senior residents, and you're an intern, and you, like, you're afraid to talk because you feel like you sound like an idiot. But, like, after that first week or two, you fly with a mic. I don't know how you do it without it.
No, like, I'm a big fan of the dictation software.
Banner has is go fantastic. Ahead. God bless. Like, whatever Dragon Banner pays for is mm-hmm. spectacular. Like, it does not mess up. It corrects.
Nice.
It's good at medical terminology, like...
Yeah, we didn't use it that much in residency. I think when we went to MD Anderson, they hadn't switched over to Epic yet. So everything was dictated over the phone, basically. Clinic notes, consults, everything. Which it was great because I never really checked the dictations that they sent back to me because we were only there for 3 months. So I'm not sure what sort of, you know, dictation errors are floating around. We did a good bit in fellowship. But it was through Epic, so like we would, you know, it was a combination of dictation and Epic. I like it. I think I'm faster dictating than typing. I think most people are once you get the hang of it. So I don't know, Jay, you guys aren't using dictation.
No, I haven't dictated very much. There's one couple of times in the fellowship who like to dictate, and it was fine. One of them was very. It was kind of like, you know, Dr. Smith, where he has the sheets. Mm-hmm. So when you dictate, you just dictate off the sheet. So there wasn't a lot of thinking involved.
A template?
yeah. But also they have, it wasn't like a Dragon dictation that just puts in your words. They made use of scribes. So they would go through your dictation and then type it in. So that's all I'd been exposed to. But nothing really here at UTMB.
Does UTMB have any scribes?
They do. I think once your clinic is busy enough, you can use the scribes. But okay. Yeah, I'm not there yet. I think some of the busier attendings probably have scribes.
I have a PSA for all one people that care that are listening to this right now that are scribes. But like, I've met a ton of scribes, and they are like wonderful, hardworking people that are all pre-health professions almost. And it's like, they're almost like a template. Like, this kid is either going to be pre-PA or pre-NP or pre-med. They're in undergrad or finishing undergrad or whatever. And they're scribing to get medical experience, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, at the risk of sounding terrible, like, the whole point at this point, I think, is you got to stand out. You have to have things on your application that make you look different than everyone else. So the PSA, like, if you think being a scribe is going to get you into medical school, everybody that is being a scribe thinks that being a scribe is in the medical school. Yeah. So I'm just saying, like, it's a great thing to do. You learn a lot. And honestly, getting someone to make a phone call for you is the most important thing, probably. So if you're scribing for someone that'll make a phone call, fine. But, like, just realize that it's not actually setting you apart from everyone. It's actually just doing the same thing that just about everybody's doing. Yeah. Anyway,
what do you scribe PSA. Do you have any ideas for what you could do that could set you apart?
I think... finding something that you're passionate about that's an outside of medicine, and then showing that you're really dedicated to it. So like people who do like Teach for America, or I don't know, go study a language or get a master's degree in something that's not in healthcare or in medicine, or go work in another industry for a while. And then I just feel like those are the people that are getting into medical school. The average age is like 24 or something of admission, which I was 20, you know, like I was 19 the first time I applied. Like it's not the same anymore.
Did you skip grades or something?
I skipped a year of college. I recently lost, I discovered the title of youngest resident in the program, which made me sad. Only by a few weeks, but I guess it was time. But I enjoyed it.
Is that what you get for winning your spelling bee competition that you were telling us about?
Wait, you need to put this one on air, because this is an interesting story. You're a spelling bee champ.
I got lots of stories. We all got lots of stories. Yeah, I grew up in Abilene, Texas. It's a small town. Not full of academic overachieving minorities, much like Sugarland or the Dallas suburbs. So I was it. I was the academic overachieving minority by myself. So there's the regional spelling bee, where if you win the regionals, you're sponsored by your local newspaper or whatever to go to the national competition in D.C. And that's on ESPN every year. Literally every year. I don't remember the dates, honestly. I think it's sometime in the spring.
It's always at very end of the school year.
Yeah,
I remember.
Make it to ESPN?
I did. I made it to ESPN in the eighth grade.
Do you have footage?
ESPN?
No, I don't have footage.
A giant nerd.
Yeah, but you never made it to ESPN for being a basketball player.
I made it on ESPN for. I was Cam went crazy on ESPN one time. I was in they had the ESPN game day.
There you go.
So I was told.
So I want to hear, how do you study for this, like, spelling bee?
It's the worst thing I ever did. They used to, like, for the lower level bees, like your school and then your regional spelling bee, there's a book, and they just ask from the book.
I had the book. Then, I had the book one
Yeah,
time.
The, something with a P. Idea, I think it was called, I don't remember. And then, like, after that, you just study words. Like, there's a documentary on like some kids that were pretty famous in the spelling bee world, so like all 10,000 people that have ever cared, and like, I mean, the big prize is a big deal. It's like $50,000 worth of stuff. Like, it's a huge thing, and you're on ABC and ESPN and stuff. And kids study from the time they're like 7 or 8 years old, and they have like Latin coaches and German coaches and French coaches. Wow. And like, it's nuts. Some kids just straight up study the dictionary.
Yeah, like,
the
word that's what I was asked. Do you like read the dictionary?
No, I never did that.
Oh man.
I got more rebellious as time passed. So by the time I was in eighth grade, you know, I was pink. Real men wear pink. Like, I played RuneScape on the computer. Like, the spelling bee was in the past, you know. So I made it, but.
So how far did you get on ESPN?
I was like, I made it to the first round that was on TV. It was like the fifth round or something. I finished in like the top. Or it's tied 49th, but like there's like a, you know, 50 people that got eliminated that round. So
Do you remember the word that eliminated you?
Yeah, it was Cassidius. I still don't know how to spell it. I don't remember how I spelled it. I don't remember how the right way is. I know that it's the word for the ball post on the top of a fence. That's what I remember.
Cassidius?
For the definition.
That sounds like an adjective to me. I think you're wrong on that.
I feel like you guys might have looked this up beforehand. It feels like a setup.
I see. Cassidius in the dictionary. This might be it. I don't know. Shaped like a helmet, applied to a Corolla with a broad helmet-shaped upper pedal.
All right. So clearly, this telling me was not a formative experience. But yes, I think maybe it was something to do with the helmet. This thing round.
You want to try to spell it now for redemption?
Try to spell it.
It's either E-O-U-S or I-O-U-S. I picked the wrong one.
Spelling bee style. You have to say the word, spell it out, and say the word again.
You can't bully me anymore. I already matched.
Origin in Latin. Do you want to use it in a sentence?
No, I mean, it's the first, the beginning is C-A-S-S-I-D. That's easy. I don't remember if it was I-O-U-S or E-O-U-S. I think I spelled it I-O-U-S in the real way is E-O-U-S.
And you have to stand up with like really nerdy looking clothes and do it. And then once you're done,
you sit back down. I've already done all of this too many times. Those days are in the past. Yeah, C-A-S-S-I-D. I think it's E-O-U-S is the right way.
The only thing
but I could be wrong.
More lame than that is being on ESPN for being a chess champion. But
dude, chess is for real.
It is. It's hard. But I don't know. I don't know if it should be on ESPN.
Well, when the COVID was happening, you know, they didn't have anything else to share.
Yeah. Mo, I think they're silenced. I just see your lips moving.
Oh, no, I'm not. My dog was barking.
Were you going to say that you were on ESPN for chess?
No. I was going to say that in this. I almost won our fifth grade spelling bee. But I got eliminated on the word gesture. And I spelled J-E-S. I said J-E-S-T-E-R, and it was G-E-S-T-U-R-E. I was so mad.
Oh, that's mean. Yeah, that's mean.
I was so mad.
But do they clarify gesture? Or
no, like they didn't use it in a sentence. They just said,
gesture. We have to ask all the questions.
Yeah, apparently you have to ask, I guess. I don't know. You don't know
all the tricks. You learn the tricks when you go to ESPN. Or ESPN.
Yeah, and I studied from the book and everything. I just, you know, got eliminated.
It's Sugarland. You're not going to make it to Nationals anyways.
That's pretty good for being
a Sugarland. Yeah.
How far did you get, Jay?
That's a good question. I think in my sixth grade class, like maybe social studies class, a class of like 20 people, I might have gotten like third place in the social studies quiz.
Hmm.
That was the best.
The geography B too. There was some kid that was at the National B the week after he had placed like second in the National Geography B. And I was like,
I did almost win the TOA Quiz Bowl 2 years ago.
Oh my gosh. I should talk about this.
No, because I was really mad. I was really upset. So I never won an academic competition in my life. And I never thought I would. And then when I'm like 31 or 32, I have the chance to. Oh my gosh, this is crazy. Like, anyway, so we go there and we're getting our butts kicked. And I'm answering questions. I'm like doing my best. And I'm not going to put them out in the air. My partner, he's not on the podcast, but my partner's not saying anything. So I'm looking at him like, dude, why don't you help me out? And he's like, no, bro. I don't want to sound stupid. The only thing that could happen if I answer is people are going to think I'm stupid. So I'm looking at him like, dude, all right. So, and then, like, I basically just answer everything. We make this tremendous comeback, and we get to the final round with me basically being the only one to answer questions. And I was like, what the heck is going on? So, we get to the final round. I talk to my partner. I'm like, dude, we're in the final round. No matter what you say, they won't think you're stupid. We're in the final round. So, then finally, he, like, starts answering questions, and he's, like, killing it. The final round, he's, like, just destroying. We're both, like, doing well, and we're there. It's just us and one other team. And then the last question, gosh, how did this work out? This was really stupid. Okay, so I think I remember. There was like they put up a subtruck fracture, and it was fixed with like a DHS, I think. So the question was like, you know, why would this fail or something? And then we said, I think we said wrong implant choice. Or something like that. And that's actually, you know, we're all taught that, you know, you shouldn't treat subtruck fractures with DHSs. So anyway, so then they said we were wrong. They said the right answer was like primary versus secondary healing or some kind of weird BS thing they were saying. So then that put us only up 5 points. We're still winning. There's one question after that. So we're only up like 5 points. And I already thought we were gypped because I was like, man, we should have been right. Like we said the right answer. And our program director agreed with us too. I talked to him after the quiz bowl. So, and then the last question was this basic science question. I don't even remember the answer to the question anymore, but the answer was like hunters and hurlers. And like literally they threw the question up. And then if you answer it, you get it right, you get points. But if you get it wrong, you lose points. So we're up five. So I look at my partner. I'm like, dude, I have no clue. Like, I'm not going to answer. And he's like, yeah, I'm not going to answer too. And we're like, oh, let's throw them off. There's no way the other team knows it because it's so obscure. So then we start saying like, you know, Tay-Sachs disease. We're like whispering amongst ourselves really loud. I think it's Tay-Sachs disease, or I think it's like Gaucher's disease, just to, like throw off the other team. And then somehow they pull it out of their butt after like 5 minutes of silence. I thought they had to answer something because it was the last question and they were losing. They pulled it out of their butt, hunters and hurlers. They got it right and they got 10 points for it, and we lost.
Ooh.
Like it was like this is my only chance ever in my whole life to win an academic competition, and that's how it ended. Man.
All right, I'm sure upset about that. The AOFAS will have some opportunities for redemption, I'm sure.
Yeah, you'll probably lose that too.
Yeah, I'll lose that too. But anyway, that was not on ESPN. It was less cool. So
what's the hardest orthopedic word to spell?
Oh God, I'd have to, it's. I mean, oh. If you're counting eponyms.
Yeah, maybe.
Sure. Silver Skull, because I was running. Oh,
that's a good one. Yeah,
there's like, a J in there, right?
Silver Skull. I was like, how do I write this? And I had to look it up.
Isn't there a J in Silver Skull?
I still don't know. I just put it in my template. Now I never have to spell it again. It's in my template.
I think there's a J in there somewhere.
Yeah. I think you're right.
That's it. Yeah, that's a tough one.
I think it's SKJOLD at the end, but
that might win it.
Like, yeah, that's probably
that's
it.
That's how we pronounce it, but I bet like Europeans or whoever invented the word is probably pronounced like silver ski old or something. Something
that we've done. There's a
I think orthopedics is hard to spell because no one really knows what the actual spelling is.
Because there is no correct spelling. Yeah. Everyone is right or wrong.
Well, everyone's wrong.
Everyone's wrong.
How do you spell that?
It depends on the context.
Really?
Yeah, if it's important, I put an A. If it's not important, I don't.
Oh.
I don't know why. Completely arbitrary basis. Ooh.
Do you hold your pinky up when you do it, too?
It's like this.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know. I just do an E. I'm a simple guy.
I just make it up.
Yeah.
I make it up as I go.
Yeah.
I do AE because I think we're a refined and, you know, very proper profession. So I want to put the proper dignity on the name.
Well, we are known for our refined mannerisms.
It's 2020 where orthopedics has changed.
There's nothing more refined than walking.
What is your most exciting part of your first week?
Oof.
Well, waiting on results from that septic kneecap. That's the most exciting thing ever.
Oh, yeah, I can talk about that. That was a weird...
I didn't mean to answer for you.
No, that's
thrilling.
Why not open? If you're not used to... Yeah, if you're the first orthopedist they've had in a while, why not just do a simple...
I mean, if you're on the fence, minimal morbidity...
I did a sports fellowship.
Okay, good answer. I was just thinking with all this news, Kurt, you know, everything new around you, you know, I don't know if I like them. First case as attending, you were saying it was kind of weird, like
it was just kind of like I didn't think about it until after the case, really.
Yeah.
Like eventually I sat down to the opno and I'm like, wait, that was my first case. Like, you know, when you're in it, it just kind of flies and you just kind of go. You know, this is kind of getting off topic, but open washouts, and I know some people would argue that you can't get all the infection out of a knee with a scope. I've heard that argument before. I think the literature says you can, from what I remember. I haven't looked it up in a long time, but I think it's equivalent.
Unless you have a study supporting arthroscopic.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think unless you have like a, unless it's a repeat or unless you have like a communicating abscess, that would probably be my indication for an open washout.
Some thought that at least some of our attendings say the lower virulence organisms, you don't have to be as aggressive necessarily to get them out. Like MSSA is fine, and MRSA they would do open.
Yeah. So.
Nice.
Yeah. And then I've got more cases next week, just little things. Like, it's great. Great stuff.
Nice.
What about you, Jay?
All right.
Your sore time.
All right. Well, Mihal, you're saying?
I was just saying we've talked about all orthopedics for the entire time. But we talked about the spelling bee.
You did talk about the spelling bee.
No, but Jay, you talked about your most exciting experience of week one.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm still like very wary of HIPAA stuff I can put out there, so I'm not going to talk to this in a lot of detail. I'll say my first case was kind of similar type of case to Dr. Khalid's Tamo's case, in that it was, but you know, doing your first case was kind of it was very interesting. You know, on the one hand, we've all done cases on our own before, but on the other hand, being the attending is kind of like, I thought it was kind of surreal at first, you know, and then my first clinic too, it was kind of surreal at first also. But you know, all the decision making kind of comes once we've already done so much training and seeing patients on our own and all that. But the first clinic day and the first OR case was definitely kind of surreal. And I'm kind of happy that first case was similar to most cases and nothing too complex, because you know, without going into detail, my next case was like, boom, like just really trashed trauma, you know, fracture case. And I won't go into detail, because again, HIPAA stuff, but I needed pretty much, it was a case 2 years ago, I probably wouldn't have been able to do as well. And then, you know, I'm really happy with how it went. And, but it's really like, you know, welcome to attending hood. Here you go. So, you know, then I've had a few more cases since then, and they've all been interesting cases. So, you know, so far I've done a handful of cases, and, you know, other than the first one, I think they've all been pretty educational, pretty interesting. And, yeah, I've been pretty happy so far. So I know I've got a few more coming up the following week, and I've seen some patients in clinic that, you know, would probably be ready for surgery after a little bit longer. So things are picking up, and it's nice. It's a lot of fun. You know, I'll say, you know, I think I've said this to a few residents already, but you know, basically being an attending, you know, every emotion you have as a resident before a case, you know, or during or after a case, whatever it is, just becomes amplified as an attending.
Oh no! Oh God! You know, you gonna tell us about all your adrenaline?
No.
Are you gonna get all good dude on us?
No, I'm already a good dude, so
man,
getting more gooder. But it really is. It really is a lot of fun.
Yeah. How was your support, like the staff around you? Because you did they know you when you went back? Dude, like the people you worked with before?
Man, it's awesome. Like I can't, like every day I see people that I've known before, and it's just like literally I was talking to one of my partners about this the other day. It's like everywhere you go, it's like a welcome back party, like multiple times a day. Like it's literally like I've had clinics
pretty cool.
Three different places so far, and every time I've showed up to my clinic, you know, it's the staff from before, most of them are still there. It's just like, you know, oh my gosh, it's you, welcome back, blah, blah, blah. And it's just really cool. It's a really cool thing. And same for the OR, you know, being the OR, it's familiar people. I had Todd for a couple cases, and yeah, it's just so cool seeing these old people again. But you know, I'll tell you, it's kind of funny too. Once in a while, you see someone, and you're like, you know, you lock eyes, and it's like I know this person, but I can't exactly remember. Then they're probably, I don't know what they're thinking. You know, if they know me, they're probably thinking the same thing. If they don't know me, they're probably wondering why am I staring at them. So then it's just like, you know, you probably 5% of the time I'm like, should I say hi to this person, or should I just like pretend I don't know him, or pretend I know him, or whatever. So most people, you know, you still know and recognize, but just some people, 5% of people you're kind of unsure about.
Yeah.
Also funny to think about is how many of those people look at, not you, but residents, when they come back and they're like, oh God, this guy's back. It's got to be a decent percentage. Decent percentage.
Could be.
Hey man, those residents get jobs somewhere. So.
That's true. Even if it's their third job. Oh, that's a topic we should just never talk about.
But overall, it's been a good experience. So
I'm surprised with how nice people are to you when you're attending.
Yeah. I had a phone call with another attending outside of orthopedics, and he's like, oh, thank you for taking the time to talk with me. You know, yeah, I think we should do more attending to attending talk. And remembering as a resident, if I called an attending, he'd be like, why are you calling me?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Call the resident. And now it's just like, you know, it's very different.
Yeah. As a resident, I'm a strong advocate of attending to attending talks. Just saying.
Yeah.
Makes things a lot easier.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Like I think I tweeted this too. Like I had a hospitalist end up transferring a patient over to their service, which was never had that happen before.
And yeah, I think non-academic centers are just different.
Well, yeah. Well, it is definitely different. It's a little bit more collegial, I think.
Yeah, because you'd rely on everyone relies on each other for business.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You can't survive without them. Like,
yeah,
that's a good point. We've got two groups in our hospital. We have an academic group and a private group of hospitals at our hospital. And like, the there are relationships. I should probably stop, but there are relationships between departments and things like that to keep departments alive. Like,
yeah,
people appreciate business and private practice. If you're a small hospitalist group and you act like douches and you don't want to be primary on anyone, they'll just find another hospitalist group. That's how my dad makes a living. He's not being a douche, but he's a small hospitalist group, right? Like, they contract themselves out to hospitals. They're not hospital employed. So where they need coverage, or if you're good, then they, you know, people will pay you for extra coverage and stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know, man. I haven't really had a reason to be mean yet. It's kind of nice. Everyone's just super friendly over here.
I've never been written up. I've really? Been mean, but I've never been written up. Yeah.
I have.
Or that I know of. I would assume that I would find out. But
sometimes.
I've been mean a couple of times. I think it's warranted.
What?
What's been the most challenging thing your first week?
The EMR, by far.
By far?
Yeah, not even close. The EMR is like first, second, and third most challenging part. Because you got to understand, I've used Epic since med school. I haven't used like anything else, basically. Like, maybe we used a little bit of that Cerner system in med school, but most of it was Epic. Residency was all Epic. Fellowship was Epic. So, like, it's totally different going into a new system. I'm trying to find a workflow because I'm not used to being slow in clinic, and it's annoying.
That's the same adjustment for me too. I'm not used to, you know, were your 14 patients, was that over a whole day or over?
That was over a whole day. That was one patient an hour.
So we were at the same pace. Like, I've had about 8 patients for half days, and it's like, wow, this, you know, you're just trying to keep up, run room to room. And I think a lot of it's just the biggest challenge is the amount of paperwork that we're responsible for. You know, so
are you getting a lot of paperwork?
Here's the residents write great notes, and you know, my residents did a really good job, you know, using my template and all those things. But even still, just because you're the attending now, you know, when I co-sign the notes, I put my own paragraph after every note, you know, and I read pretty much every line in the note just to make sure it's documented correctly. So it's still, even though I'm not writing all my notes, it still takes a lot of time. And a lot of the stuff I do at home, because during clinic, you know, you're running room to room, you're trying to answer everyone's questions. But yeah, I think the pace and a lot of the pace is because of the paperwork that you have to do is an adjustment.
Have you had a negative patient experience yet?
I don't know about negative. I've had difficult patients, let's say.
Have you had any patient like get mad at you or leave like a bad review for you?
Not yet.
I can't tell if this is that or if this is something different, but I had one patient in clinic who we had basically scheduled for a surgery, and my scheduler came back like a little bit later in the day saying that they had canceled the surgery and canceled all appointments after that. And I'm like, why? And she had no idea. So I don't know if that's because it was something I did or because of his schedule or something like that. I'm still trying to figure it out, but
yeah,
it was weird. And it was a totally normal clinic visit too. Like, about as normal as you can be.
So, people are weird, man.
Yeah.
Well, it's stuff that, you know, as residents, you don't really think about, but as attendings, you do kind of wonder, like, I wonder why that patient didn't come back.
Oh, you think about all these little things. Like, I found myself thinking about wait times. Like, I look, the one nice thing about our clinic EMR is that it shows how long they've been waiting after they've been in the room. So I can see, like, you know, make sure that they're not waiting too long. And all that little stuff, like, the patient experience really starts to get to you. And you try to make it the best for everyone.
Yeah. So I'll say there's a situation I had where, you know, I don't plan on doing this forever probably, but when I'm starting out, I'm looking ahead to see what's coming in. I'm reviewing x-rays just so when they come in, you know, I'll have some semblance of a plan already. And this one patient, I was, you know, pretty much positive I was going to need to operate on it. So then, you know, I was being prophylactic because, you know how it is when you're posting a case, so you don't post, if you want to post it for the next few days, there may not be availability for like a week or two. So I was trying to get on top of that. So I preemptively had it posted literally the morning that I was supposed to see this patient. So before the patient arrives, you know, I didn't know this would happen, but the patient was contacted by anesthesia, and I think the insurance people or whoever, the financial people, telling, you know, having questions about her her surgery that I hadn't talked to her about yet. So that was a situation I had to smooth over in clinic. Mm-hmm. I think everything went fine, but there was just little hiccups like that where, I made a note to myself, I'll start either seeing, if I want to post a patient, I'll just make sure I see them before I leave a phone call or something. Yeah. So I was trying to be proactive and get a surgical slot, but, it didn't work out as well as I had hoped.
Yeah.
So just things like that.
Yeah, I hear you. It's a different pace. It's a different experience.
Yeah.
It's like stuff that everyone says, everyone tells you about this kind of stuff. And I don't know, now it's like starting to come to fruition. You're starting to realize some of it. So I don't know. Midoth, what's going on in your life?
The Cowboys won despite doing everything possible to lose.
Did they win? Then they fumbled.
They were down 20. Fumbled four times in the first quarter.
Oh, jeez.
And they were down 15 with 4.5 minutes left. Scored 2 touchdowns. Kicked the onside kick. I love it when brains win in sports, because I was never athletic enough to win based on that. But the rule for onside kicks is that the kicking team has to wait for the ball to move 10 yards, but the receiving team can just go get it. Like, they don't have to wait. But the way that the Cowboys kicked it is Zuerlein just laid the ball flat on the ground, mm-hmm. and he kicked it where it was spinning really slowly in an arc. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't a normal onside kick where they kicked it forward and tried to get it to bounce or whatever. And so somehow it just messed with the Rams, and they didn't realize they could get the ball. So the Cowboys were just watching it, waiting for it to go 10 yards. And as soon as it crossed the line, fell on it. And the Rams could have just at any time stepped past the line and picked it up. But they didn't do it.
Oh, wow.
They didn't, I don't know. They were just watching the Cowboys watch the ball or whatever. But because of that, the Cowboys picked up the ball and then kicked the game-winning field goal and won. So that was awesome.
Nice.
What else? I'm finishing my PhD rotation soon, which is a bummer because it's awesome. But I'm doing adult sports, which is kind of what I want to do. So that's cool, too. I officially hate the weather here. It's October next week. It's October next week, and the temperature thermostat right now is 106 for the high.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So, we were in the 30s this morning. So
yeah, it's unreal. I'm still crippled by the weather. Oh, I ran 10 miles for the first time this morning. That's the longest I've ever run.
Really?
Every part of my body is hurting. My feet hurt. My head hurts. I don't know. I don't know if it was worth it or not, but
I've never been a runner, at all. I can't do treadmills. I can't do outside.
I can only do outside, but I didn't like it until this past few months. I mean, I didn't have much of a choice, too, with COVID.
Yeah.
There's no basketball. The gyms are closed. The only thing I could do was,
even in Arizona? I thought Arizona was pretty, wild.
No, Arizona closed down. Arizona closed down and then reclosed down. When the surge in July happened, we reclosed down. Things are open now. I went to the gym yesterday. And I was actually spectacular. Almost every person is carrying around their own bottle of, equipment cleaner, because that's how much they have sitting out. And, every other machine and stuff is closed, and there's a capacity restriction. Masks are required, which was a nuisance to try and work out with.
Yeah.
But everybody's got a mask on, so. And I don't know how much you can trust the CDC at this point, just based on how weird their recommendations have been. But
yeah, it's all over the place.
They basically said, getting it from surface contact is almost impossible.
Yeah.
It's almost has to be aerosolized. So,
but
you're disinfecting.
We keep ignoring that, right? I feel like everyone just keeps ignoring that stuff.
Yeah.
Nobody really knows what to believe anymore.
Yeah, wear masks. I don't know. I mean, I just think we have to learn to live with it, personally. How long are the meetings going to get canceled and the university is going to stay shut down with travel and, all that has an impact. It's not like it doesn't, so.
I don't think it's going to be that much longer, honestly.
I don't think so either, but.
I think we're getting.
And then the vaccine thing, it's nonsense to say that the vaccine's coming out in the next month or two. That just doesn't make any sense. Plus, like we've said before, you're going to get a vaccine that has never been taken before. But people, I think it was I don't know what decade it was, but when the first live inactivated polio vaccine came out, there was accidentally a batch with live polio in it. A whole group of people got live polio just injected into them. You just gave people, polio. You shot polio into people.
Is that real?
I don't think this is a process that should rush. Yeah. McHugh is telling us the story that they got a letter when they were residents in Toronto. I don't know when McHugh is a resident, but I'm not going to guess. He said they got a letter saying you may have received a contaminated batch of polio vaccine with an accidental live vaccine rather than a live inactivated virus.
Jeez, that's terrible.
Like, I know. So, like, either you're going to be injecting the COVID vaccine or you're going to be injecting COVID. So, I'll probably wait for the first round of.
What if you don't have a choice? What if they mandate it? Like how they mandate, you know, flu vaccines and TB tests and all those things.
I just quietly rebel as long as possible.
Yeah, I have a feeling we're all going to be forced to take it.
Yeah, I'm sure we're all going to be forced to take it, but there will be opportunities to not be the first people.
Yeah, I want to see what happens when people refuse to take it, because you know what's going to happen. Because this is so politicized now that, you know, there are people that maybe rightfully so aren't going to trust this vaccine and will say no for, you know, for personal reasons. And I wonder what's going to happen.
Most polls are around 40% of people not convinced that they would get the vaccine if it came out.
I want to know what that number is for healthcare workers, though.
That's true. I also want to know if it'll be a mandate or not. You can mandate people to be...
Wear masks,
and you can mandate being shut down. Can you mandate vaccination? I bet it'll be
hospital dependent, I'm sure. Like each.
Oh, you mean for healthcare workers?
Yeah, for healthcare.
The general population.
Oh no! I'm just talking about
for us. The flu shot's required.
Exactly.
I don't think they could mandate for the entire population.
Yeah, I don't think they can. Yeah. Well, I don't know. They do it for kids, right?
People are wearing masks. You can't go anywhere without a mask on.
It's true.
Yeah, I don't know what's gonna happen.
Well, they can't. I don't think they can mandate it right off the bat before they prove that it's safe.
Yeah. It's gonna be interesting. The next couple months, as this election gets closer, are gonna be interesting.
Yeah. What one thing do you guys look forward to if society normalizes?
Basketball again.
Yep.
Yes, that's my thing.
Are we all gonna say the same thing?
Like, I was gonna say. Yeah, but I'll go with basketball.
That's maybe I was saying spelling bees.
Well, we're just trying, like, the people that I play with, we're trying to figure out where we can play outside. Like, we're going to stop caring about finding an open gym. But, yeah, like, even the gyms that had opened, like, they, like, what were my LA Fitness, and they tried to keep the gym open with some rules and people weren't following them, so they just took the rims down. Like,
Our gym here is actually, parks here. Like, I found a gym here that's it's basically like a warehouse that they've turned into a sports complex with like a big soccer field and three basketball courts and like a weight room. It's pretty nice actually. Awesome. They're open, so they're just doing like one person per half court and like private lessons. So like nobody's actually playing real basketball. But
yeah,
I've had a hoop to shoot on, which is the first time in 6 months. So it's been really nice. Yeah, it helps. It keeps you sane too. The only problem is it's 30 minutes away from where I live because I live.
Well, that's why I run
in the middle of nowhere. So
I'm telling you, man, this Nike Running Club guy, this Coach Bennett, as he calls himself, he's a good coach. It's like, and not a good running coach, or like not, you know, like it's not like technique that he coaches. He's just good about mentally while you're running. And then they did some runs with Headspace, which is like the big meditation app, and the guy from Headspace, who was like this guy who left his life, joined, became a monk, and then came back to the U.S. and probably a millionaire now based on his app. But they're just good, like, mental processes. It's good. It really is. Like, I think it's a big stress reliever. It's a big, I don't know. It's good. It helps you, like, set goals. You accomplish them. You feel good about it.
Yeah. Whatever you got to tell yourself to get through a run, I guess.
Yeah, seriously. that sounds miserable.
Awful.
What do you think about when you run?
I don't know how everything hurts.
I think that's the point, though, is that you're not really thinking about anything specific. That's the point of, like, meditating, right? Like, you're not supposed to think about stuff. You're supposed to try and distance yourself. I think it's kind of like meditating, but instead of having to, like, literally do nothing, you're like, physically moving while trying to think about nothing.
I would recommend listening to the Ortho Talk podcast.
Oh, man. All right. What else is going on? Anything else?
The NBA playoffs are great. Oh, I'm going to make my most recent unpopular opinion.
Oh, yeah.
That nobody will care about. Dude, the NFL is the modern day Roman Coliseum. Like, it's not funny anymore. Everyone's like, oh, I'm so upset. I'm so distraught. Blah, blah, blah. Like, five people tore their ACLs this morning in the first round of games in week two. Like, this is not a safe sport. Like,
Between the NFL?
Yeah. Like, I watched, listen, I watched Cowboys game. Like, I was super excited that they won. I was pounding my fist and jumping around. But, like, Saquon Barkley tore his ACL. Jimmy Bosa tore his ACL. Jimmy Garoppolo hurt his ankle. Their running back hurt his, the Niners got decimated. But, like, the safety on the Colts tore his Achilles. Like, and I'm saying, I'm just spitting this stuff out. Like, this is a year of these people's lives gone. Yeah. Like,
yeah. I mean, so what are you trying to say by comparing it to a Coliseum? Are you saying it shouldn't happen? Or?
No, I'm just saying, like, they're entertaining us. They're entertaining us at the risk of their own health. And they're not getting mauled by animals.
They're also getting millions of dollars.
So are NBA players and Major League Baseball, even NHL players. But the NFL athletes right now are getting injured at a devastating rate.
Yeah.
But then, and they're bad injuries. They're bad injuries. It's not like ankle sprains and wrist sprains and, like, it's like ripping your knees. Todd Gurley? Like, the Rams dropped him because he's got end-stage arthritis in his knee.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. He's, what, 26 or something? Like,
I mean, it's a hazard of the profession, right?
Yeah. No, it is. You know, they're getting paid to entertain us and, like, have their bodies ripped apart.
It's all workers' comp. It's all workers' comp.
It is all workers' comp. Yeah.
In all seriousness, it's workers' comp injuries.
Well, you know what they say. If the patient is on workers' comp, their outcomes are worse.
Yeah. I don't think that applies.
Again, I love watching football. I'm not going to stop or anything, but I think it's crazy. Like, it's not just reading, like, tweets by Adam Schefter on what happened.
Yeah.
It's like,
so we asked
people lost their leg for a year. Like,
we asked Sean Thompson this last week. Are you going to let your kids play football?
No.
Yeah. I don't.
What if they really, really want to, and they're really fast and strong, and they're good? You know, somehow they got like they got your wife's genes and not yours. And
my wife is 5 feet tall, so hopefully they got mine. I don't know. I mean, I that's a battle I would deal with if it came, but I don't think it would be that way. Like, I just – not a lot of brown kids out there big enough to compete on the football field anyways. So, but I don't think so, mostly because of the head injury thing. But.
And if all brown parents had your mentality, there won't be any brown kids playing football. Let me just tell you that.
If I was like all the other brown parents, my kids wouldn't play any sports. So, like, no, I think we're kidding too. I don't know what the Asian households are like, but I'm sure Bo's got a bunch of friends. I had a bunch of friends. They weren't allowed to play team sports because the parents were afraid they'd get hurt.
Yeah,
like
I was allowed to play basketball and tennis.
No, I'm not saying about us, but like I had friends. Yeah. I had friends that literally weren't allowed to play team sports, like non-football team sports. I had a buddy who only played tennis because his parents wouldn't allow him to play contact sports because they were afraid he would get injured.
Yeah, that was the reason for me not playing football. We talked about this.
Yeah, there's different degrees of contact. I mean, basketball is, I don't know, is it a contact sport or not? I mean, sometimes
it is
there's a lot of bad injuries. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like, it's a contact sport.
We're all pretty for sure. Aggressive. Like, when I drive, I look for contact, you know, so it's very –
Yeah,
I remember.
Been big collisions.
Yeah, it makes it fun, so. But I would say if
soccer's pretty bad too.
Like a modern Coliseum, it'd probably be like boxing or UFC, MMA type stuff.
Yeah, but that's fighting. Like that's straight up. Fighting.
Literally
like,
is. Yeah.
That's literally fight.
That's a more apt comparison.
No, you're right. You're right. I shouldn't say that. Like, they're not like putting their lives on the line or anything. But it's just like I don't know. It's crazy. I just think we should acknowledge it at least.
Let's just say football is like the modern equivalent of chariot racing. There's some risks. But there's some glory, you know. Like you could fall off your chair. Back in the day, you could fall off your chair. You didn't get hurt.
Dude, back in the day, last year at the Houston, 2 years ago, I went to the Houston Rodeo, and the Methodist had an advertising chariot thing where the horses were racing it around in circles, and they literally like flew off the chariot, like flew off the horses and flipped over.
Exactly. Alarming. I would say that's like what football
I'm
is.
I'm laughing, and I shouldn't be, but it was kind of funny. Yeah. But it was Methodist. It was like the Methodist orthopedic, you know, they're advertising at the rodeo.
But, yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know about the Coliseum, but I'll grant you that it's very vicious. I mean, it's basically
alarming.
It's basically high-energy collisions all the time. So,
yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, those guys get compensated for it. They're trained for it. I mean.
Yeah, I guess they get paid for it.
They definitely get paid for it.
So, Mira, would you, if someone offered you an NFL contract, would you take it then?
No.
Really?
No. How much is your leg worth to you?
Really?
And not much because I could operate with a knee scooter if I had to.
So you know, when Derrick Rose, when he tore his meniscus, there was this debate over back in the day that he hadn't repaired and not debrided. And it was a very interesting debate because, you know, if you have repaired, you have to sit out for longer. Whereas if you debride it, you can play again in a few weeks, you know, a month or so. And, you know, so I've heard this perspective, like, why would you get it repaired when you are literally costing yourself the potential for millions of dollars by sitting out time and taking a hit to your reputation? And the counter argument is that if you have it repaired and it works, then, you know, you have less chance of arthritis in the future. But, you know, so, but then, you know, I've heard, you know, so who cares? If you make millions of dollars, you can just get your arthritis taken care of. So it's, you know, I've heard both sides of this argument.
Yeah, but, you know,
yeah, there's a lot but have you seen the knee revision that comes back?
Yeah. There's a lot of NFL players that are like on, you know, massive chronic pain and like, you know, opioid dependency and stuff. It's not a small problem. And
yeah, like, NFL players. You're getting paid a lot of money to give up a lot of your physical health and mental health.
Yeah. It's definitely a trade-off.
And I think it's more in the NFL than it is in like the NBA and stuff.
What about you, Mo? Would you take an NFL contract?
For sure. Are you kidding me?
You'd be a lineman.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'd have to get in shape.
I'd probably take any other sport, but I don't think I'd take the NFL.
Yeah, I would do it.
Brett Favre doesn't remember his daughter's soccer game. Come on, man.
Yeah, it's real. That stuff is real. But if it was for 1 year and you're paying me that much, I'd do it. I'd sacrifice.
You sacrifice some brain cells?
I sacrifice some brain cells for it.
I'd be a kicker.
Yeah, okay, if you got a kicker contract,
no kickers, no backup quarterbacks, like, you know, you're on the field.
Yeah. Let me rephrase, would I let my kid be a kicker? Hell yeah, I would let my kid be a kicker. I played soccer in high school. At least the kickers were always one or two dudes on the soccer team that would miss the hard days of practice and just kick with the football team. And they would literally skip all the hard stuff with football and just be out there kicking for hours. I know a kid who exaggerated his role on the high school football team to get a spot as a backup kicker at Florida State and now has a national championship ring because he was the backup kicker on the Florida State team.
That's kind of awesome, actually.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah. All right. It's been over an hour. I think we should probably end this now.
All right. See you all on the football field.
All right.
Appreciate
it. Have a good one.
Hey, can we time out? All right. All good dudes, stop what you're doing. This is Time Out. This is the OrthoTalk podcast. Today, we are doing a real conversation with an illustrious guest. Surgeons today are Asif Khalid and Jay Chen. Antibiotics, ANSEF, of course, what do we even ask? Fire risk, high due to lit conversations and explosive topics. Any questions or concerns? Nope. All right, we can go. Incision.
And that'll do it for us. Thank you to Dr. Patel for giving us some of his time. If you guys like what we're doing, like I said before, please leave us 5 stars on whatever platform you're using. If you want to catch our old episodes, you can do so at our website, www.orthotalkpod.com. Or you can catch us on Twitter to see the video of the podcast that you're listening to. Just YouTube the OrthoTalk podcast, and you'll find it there. If you want to get in touch with us on Twitter, you can do so at our handle at OrthoTalkPod, or email us, theorthopodcast@gmail.com. Hope you guys are enjoying what we're doing. If you have any suggestions, feel free to give it to us, and thank you guys for the opportunity.